You are now listening to Heat of the Street, the official podcast of our streets. And now, broadcasting to you from wherever the hell he feels like, here's your host, Nick Edward.
Hello there, welcome to the show. All right, now not only am I excited to be here, I'm also Redneck Edward. That sounded better in my head. All right, so don't forget, if you want to weigh in on today's discussion, you can hit me up at OurStreetsNet on Twitter or on the Our Streets Facebook page, and you should subscribe on YouTube, or don't. I'll cry myself to sleep either way. So let me apologize for not uploading last week. I had to take a personal day. It was pointed out to me that 288,000 jobs were added in America in June. This is in regard to, I believe, last week's discussion, well, the week before last discussion, in which I discussed the economy and jobs in America. And so someone pointed this out to me, and somehow that makes everything I said about unemployment in this country wrong, although I stand by what I said. I also want to point out that the majority, like 275,000 majority, of those new jobs that were supposedly added last month are actually part-time jobs. In other words, they only help the unemployed pay part of their rent. Still, there are 3.1 million long-term unemployed people in the U.S., so 288,000 jobs is peanuts. It's barely a dent. Interestingly, the unemployment rate for adult women and African Americans went down, even though black workers still have a 10.7% unemployment rate. But the unemployment rate for Hispanics, Asians, white people, and males in general remained pretty much the same. The unemployment rate for teenagers actually increased, and yes, that is important because their lack of a job history due to the economy will come back to haunt them when they get older. And it's especially bad because this is summer, and this is when so many teenagers are supposed to be getting jobs. They're supposed to have summer jobs. That's how it was when I was growing up. But, of course, the hiring managers will blame them for their non-existent job history, as if teenagers control the economy or something. They don't, but some of these hiring managers are ridiculous, and they will act like everything under the sun is your fault. This has been labeled as a she-covery, jokingly by some, because women are regaining their jobs quicker than men. And it's good that someone is actually recovering to some extent. But it would be just plain callous and heartless to overlook all those who are still suffering. What about the families with kids? Both parents need to work to get by in America, in this economy, in this day and age. So how can working families recover if only one parent can find a job, if only mom is working but not dad? You need two incomes. That's just the economic reality these days, especially in some of the more expensive places to live. And prices are not going down for anything. It was reported by the Richmond Times-Disgrace, Times-Dispatch, that Virginia's unemployment rate actually increased in June. 2 months in a row, the state's unemployment rate increased. As a matter of fact, unemployment in 14 states increased in June. In Alaska and West Virginia, job losses increased the unemployment rate by 1.7 and 1.2% respectively. So before you liberals start gloating, think about everything I just said and then shut up. Now let's talk about these part-time jobs that the ruling class thinks we ought to take. Thinks that we ought to be satisfied with. There was news recently that a Texas woman who worked at a Subway was fired for going to the hospital. They made her work while she was sick, or else be fired, and she eventually passed out because she was so ill. She tried to tell her boss, but the boss, being a sociopath, as is required for management positions, told her she didn't care and to get back on the line. The worker had a stomach virus and had to keep changing shirts to hide her vomit stains, so eventually she passed out and was taken to the hospital where she was informed that she was fired. And no, you can't just quit your job in this economy. It's not smart, and you know it. People have rent to pay, people have water bills to pay, people need to eat, so shut up. This is a common form of abuse that low-wage workers have to face. It's especially common in the fast food industry. A few years ago, the Industrial Workers of the World, or the IWW, had a campaign going at Jimmy John's, which, for those of you who don't know, Jimmy John's is a sandwich restaurant, sort of like Subway. I even met one of the guys who had been working on that campaign in the Twin Cities. Anyway, these workers decided to become whistleblowers and let the world know that Jimmy John's was making them work while they were sick. There are no sick days in that industry. Of course, it's bad for business when the world knows that your food is being touched and handled and all that by someone who can get you sick. So the restaurant fired the whistleblowers. They even brought in a union-busting attorney. Of course, the NLRB ruled that Jimmy John's broke the law when they fired the whistleblowers and that you should not be having sick people handling your food. You ought to let them have a sick day. And these are the type of jobs the ruling class wants us to take. Minimum wage jobs where you get fired for being so sick that you pass out. Now let's look at Amazon. I used to work at Amazon. Most of their staff are brought in through a temp agency such as Integrity Staffing. People have reported having health issues or transportation issues and needing to leave Amazon. They wanted to leave on good terms and reapply for another job when they got better. But the staffing agency would not accept that and would put these people in the same category as those who were fired for misbehavior. So now they cannot come back to work for Amazon because their names are on the naughty list, even though they unwillingly quit their job without burning any bridges for a legitimate reason. And those are the types of jobs they want you to be happy with. That's the type of desperation and turnover rate and all that that the state and the rich want to be the new norm. So, moving backwards, what I'd like to know is who this Texas subway manager was, so we can find this person online, maybe even find their phone number, and give them hell. Recession and unemployment under capitalism is like having your human rights denied and your attempt at survival mocked. And having a job and being employed under capitalism is like being a slave. Either way, you live in a world of threats and intimidation, and no reason for your troubles is considered acceptable. Bosses are sociopaths, and we don't need them, but they need us. Think about that. We do not need the bosses, we do not need the CEOs, but they need us. We can run these workplaces ourselves. We don't need to sit there and let them get paid more than us just to be a bunch of bullies. So let me get into something else here. I'm not saying all unionization attempts are bad, but viewing that as the main solution or the only solution is problematic. Set aside for a second the favoritism and the business mentality of all the major unions. Even in their most combative form, there are many aspects of the economy that the unions just cannot impact. For example, they can slow down the rate at which machines or computers replace skilled humans, but they can't hold them off forever. Eventually, if it's a trend in the industry, a machine will take your job. Unions cannot influence the demand for workers in the state of production. the natural increase in the size of the working class because people have babies, and the destruction of the middle class, or the proletarianization of the middle class, as some put it, will result in a larger pool of available unemployed workers, which means that everyone's wages will go down because there are more sellers of labor than there is demand for them. Unions can only do so much to prevent that. If they had the power to stop the destruction of the middle class and prevent unemployment, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. Union density would not have been declining throughout history. I want to leave you with this, and look at Chapter 3 of Rosa Luxemburg's Reform or Revolution. Working class revolution and the smashing of the capitalist state and the democratic control of workplaces by the workers themselves is the only real solution to this situation. But if our class keeps following the Democrat con artists at SEIU instead of forging our own solutions and collectively deciding our own fate, we're just going to remain trapped in the same cycle of misery. So let's take a break.
Hello, I'm Janie John, daughter of Jimmy John, the owner of Jimmy John's Gourmet Sandwiches. If you want your sandwich, no matter what, come to my dad's restaurant. We make sure our workers clock in, even if they're sick and dying. We're even open on federal holidays, because it's not like our workers have families. Losers don't have families. Fast food workers are such stupid, lazy animals, so they need discipline. They need to be fired for being sick, have objects thrown at them by the boss, and yelled at every day. So come on down to Jimmy John's today.
Welcome back. Isn't it funny how, here in North America, the British accent is viewed as a high society thing, even though that lady is probably just a regular person who likes to look for discounts at the grocery store like the rest of us? Speaking of Europeans, France has become the first country to ban pro-Palestine demonstrations. Even if you want to have a peaceful, uneventful demonstration against the genocide in Gaza, it's considered illegal in France now. If you defy the ban, you face up to a year in prison and a 15,000 euro fine. Even if you publish the details of an illegal rally on the internet, you risk a year in jail and a fine. The French Interior Minister said these demonstrations are, in his words, a threat to public order. Of course, pro-Palestine protesters showed up to protest in Paris anyway, which resulted in clashes with police. The Wall Street Journal has this picture of the demonstrators and just the largest bonfire in the middle of the road that I've ever seen on the news. Over 30 people were arrested during these clashes and demonstrations in France. Authorities, the ruling class, are supposed to be much smarter than us. That's what they have us believe. But they're not. They should have known that thousands of people would defy the ban. These protest bans only increase the chance of violence and disorder, and anyone who reads the news ought to know that. You can't just violate people's free speech and freedom of association and not expect resistance. What the hell were they thinking? Political leaders are never qualified for their jobs, and frankly, the world does not need these politicians. So let's keep defying bans, not just in France, but across the world. Let's just keep defying bans and police orders. We don't need rulers. The rulers need us. We had a demonstration against the siege in Gaza here in Richmond yesterday, and today, and probably Sunday too. I record this on Saturday, by the way. As far as I know, the police did not show up, at least not on Friday. It was a good rally, too. It was big for Richmond. I wrote about it on ourstreets.net, so go check out the article. So I want to criticize some groups here. In particular, I want to single out the Socialist Party of Great Britain and the Internationalist Communist Tendency. I hate to do this. I really do hate to do this because I enjoy hearing their positions on different issues, and I respect a lot of what both groups have to say. But on this one, I disagree. Now, I like to criticize dogma. I mean, really, what has swearing by old positions from leaders who've been dead for a long time ever gotten us? It's gotten us nothing, and it's gotten us nowhere, really. So here's a quote from the Socialist Party of Great Britain's blog called Socialism or Your Money Back. It goes, "It was a war of choice on both sides. Hamas probably could have saved their people from the fury of the Israeli war machine by ceding power in Gaza." Okay. That is true to an extent, in my opinion, but it overlooks a lot of things. The Socialist Party overlooks a lot of things when it says that crap. Palestinians are facing genocide. It's not a war. It's not even comparable to the invasion of Iraq. It's outright genocide. Even if Hamas never existed, the Israeli government would still be working to kill off the Palestinians entirely. Hell, some people say, and I don't know how true this is, but some people say that Israel created Hamas to divide the Palestinian liberation movement. But even if Hamas never existed, again, the Israeli government would still be working to kill off the Palestinians entirely. Look at the West Bank, where Hamas is not. Israel continues to bulldoze Palestinian homes, sometimes with people in them. People there go without water. People in the West Bank live off of less water than the World Health Organization recommends. Israel controls the water in the West Bank and denies its equal use to Palestinians. Civilians are killed by Israeli forces in the West Bank as well. So you cannot act like it would be better to just surrender to the will of the Israeli government, because it's obvious the government desires the extermination of all Palestinians. Now, I agree that nationalism or national liberation struggles can be divisive and are often ridiculous, and the rhetoric and the policies put forth by a lot of people demanding separatism and national liberation of all sorts can be ridiculous. But it's different in Palestine. The situation there is not so much a struggle for national liberation as it is a struggle to survive genocide. I would not compare the situation of the people in Gaza to those of Brittany or Quebec, for example. French-Canadian children don't get arrested on their way to school just for being who they are. The Canadian military is not frequently bombing and shelling children in Montreal and Gatineau. There is no systematic apartheid system aimed at keeping Quebecers on one side of town. Medicine and water is not being blocked and denied to the people there. There is no wall set up to prevent Quebecers from entering Ontario. All you gotta do is hop on a bus, or you can walk if you feel like it. And that's it. No one's going to stop you from entering Quebec from some other province or leaving Quebec. Palestine, on the other hand, there are walls. There are checkpoints. There are children being sent to jail without trial just for going to school and not being Jewish. Women and children are being killed by Israeli fighter jets on a regular basis. Medicine, water, and other necessities of life are being withheld from Palestinians. Although it's often wrapped in the language of nationalism, the situation in Palestine is more like the situation in the Warsaw Ghetto than an independent struggle. In Warsaw, Jews took up arms and resisted the Nazis. Not so much because of nationalism, but because they knew that the gas chambers and the ovens were waiting for them. They were resisting the extermination of their entire community. The same thing is happening in Palestine. It's not a war, it's genocide. You can't condemn the violence on both sides as if it's equal, because it's not. Palestinian rockets are basically glorified firecrackers. Americans probably shoot off something more dangerous on 4th of July when they're drunk. They're toys. Israel has real bombs, fighter jets, tanks, battleships, and lots more money, and they love to use it on Palestinians. The Western media may try to make it look otherwise by showing pictures of a destroyed neighborhood in Gaza and then lying and saying that the neighborhood is in Israel. But the truth is that, in this recent fight, Israeli deaths are not even in the double digits. Palestinian deaths are in the hundreds. The cycle of violence is not equal. Let me put it to you symbolically. Many national liberation struggles are like when rioters with Molotov cocktails and bricks clash with the police. They have a chance. They have a little bit of equality in the fight there. The situation in Palestine is more like the murder of Kelly Thomas. Remember that? A weak, unarmed man with a mental disorder being beaten to death by three police thugs as he screams for his father. That was the Kelly Thomas case. And that is what the situation in Palestine is like, the murder of Kelly Thomas. And it's equally sickening, too. I really hate to condemn that alphabet soup mentioned earlier, the SPGB and the ICT, because I do respect their views on many things. And one day I'd like to see a debate between the two groups. But on this, they have misjudged the situation. Although you can say that Marx's views did change over time, he did side with Ireland in their struggle against British imperialism. This is not to say we should support a capitalist, theocratic state in Palestine, as some Leninist groups often look like they're doing, but rather we should stand in solidarity with their resistance to genocide. Well, that's it for today. Tune in next week, and don't forget to visit ourstreets.net for more news, theory, and so on. If you want to weigh in, tweet me at ourstreets.net or leave a message on the Our Streets Facebook page. Good night.
Just because it's a U.S. country. tower.